And welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian.
And what an exciting week of conversations that we're going to be having with you, where there is news on the LGBTQ front from coast to coast to coast. Well, let's start off with Alberta, because I think it actually kicks off our conversation nicely about things that did not age well.
Are we going left to right on this?
We're going according to the order of tabs.
Okay.
So that's we're not, how that works.
We're not following the path of the sun through the sky as
no,
we... Okay.
No, the path of the opposite of that. No. We're literally following in the loose thematic order I have done. Although I will tell you this, not once in many, many months have we actually followed the path as per my tabs. It's more of a loose guideline.
That is
so
true.
So we will go where the conversation takes us.
And you're going to probably try to connect them with the worst segue you have ever heard.
Oh yes, I am renowned nationally for my awful segues.
And if you're lucky, I won't make fun of you right after you do it.
You know, and on that point about people making fun of mistakes, I wanted to talk about Jason Kenney.
Oh my god. Luke, just, why do I let you speak? What is this?
This is why I've gone into talk radio.
Oh my god.
This is literally it.
This is my life.
So Jason Kenney is the leader of the United Conservative Party, which is the provincial Conservative Party in the province of Alberta. And
And there's like four other small ones that don't really get a lot of traction.
Yeah. But they're the big ones.
They're the big ones, yeah.
And we spoke a little while ago about the fact that on World AIDS Day, which is December the 1st, he released a statement about how, you know, important it is to get tested, just sort of generic politician feel goods statement.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, okay, that's non-newsworthy.
Somebody in your department handed you a piece of paper to read because it looked like good optics.
Yeah, absolutely. This is such a big deal. Is that in 1989, we're really looking at the amongst the height of the AIDS epidemic. Mm-hmm. People are literally... Gay men are dying left, right, and center. It decimated an entire generation of gay men across North America. And what this change did, which seems to be gloated in about here at this particular recording, is it actually meant that the partners, the lovers, the folks who had been with these men right up until their dying moments were actually told, there's the door, walk out of it.
Yeah.
It denied men the ability to be with their partners literally in their dying moments. And his move here and what at the time led to a lot of pride literally denied like peace and company to these men as they passed at the height of an epidemic. It is so unspeakably deplorable that it makes me cringe.
Even beyond that, the idea of non-next of kin visiting you in hospital, the fact that there ever was a restriction on that, I find bizarre because let's say you moved somewhere, you're new in town, you're there on contract, you're only there for a year and a half, you know no one. You fall at work, your boss comes to visit you just to make sure that you're fine. Well, you're not married and you're not related to them, so no one can check in on you. So you're just bedridden for 2 weeks all by yourself.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird. There's a lot of these laws that when you take them into another context, like, what if you're just, you know, a straight white dude and you're put into a position like this? What about then? And it's the fact that this has always been there. Like dead names, the fact that dead names aren't accounted for. I'm the only person in my family who doesn't have a dead name, and there are no trans people in my family. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of reasons why you could have a dead name, and only now we're dealing with it? I don't know. There's a lot of these laws that are just so baffling. And yeah, they're really profoundly unfair and cold, and to a certain degree, sometimes they are meant to target the LGBTQ community. And sometimes they're just general bad policy, and then someone finds out that a fallout of it is that it disproportionately affects the LGBTQ community. And then they go, oh, it must be a good law then. So, I mean, you do get these, like, weird historical things like that. But it's just so baffling that these laws exist in the first place. Like, you'd think, you know, once you're in the hospital and you're there and you could just make a list of people who you consent to visit you, shouldn't that just be how it goes?
Laws have changed.
Oh, yeah. Since then. Obviously, yeah.
And it wasn't that Jason Kenney single-handedly introduced this rule.
Oh, yeah, no, he was part of a coalition or something.
It was a significant moment of effort, and the impact is real. You know what I mean? And there was a big uproar. This is coming right off the heel of the Carpe lawyer with the Freedom Institute, who is suing the government over their gay-straight alliances, saying that parents should be informed, which we said would potentially out straight allies, let alone outing gay people, which is just...
This also comes on the tail of the death of George Bush Sr., who blocked HIV research.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this was out of that same era as well. So there's a lot from that period of history that surviving gay men and the, you know, lesbian and bisexual women who helped run the palliative care centers, they're very aware of. It's in their living memory. They remember these things happening. But they never really had a place or a space to announce them. And a lot of them, rightfully so, are skeptical of social media. I'm on social media and I hate social media. I think social media brings out the worst in people. And if you disagree with me, feel free to contact us at Let's Talk Can Queer, or you can contact us on Twitter. That's kind of a semi-joke, but
Where it'll be me dealing with it. Thank you very much.
Well, you know, if there's, you know, forward anything on to me, I would be happy to talk to anyone. I mean, you know, it's, if you directly contact me in social media, I think that's...
We'll figure it out.
Whatever. I mean, it's what it's for versus what it's not for. But anyway, so it's accountability. I don't know. As a theme, let's just bring that up.
And I'm going to talk about it because we seem to be in, you know, the month of non-apologies. And we'll get to some of these other non-apologies in just different moments. But I wanted to talk about this one.
Are we talking about Pride again?
No, we're talking about Jason Kenney.
Because Toronto Pride has a lot of non-apologies.
Oh, my God. Do they? But we're talking about the fact that he spoke to the legislator and said, sure, there are things that I've done and said in my life that I regret. Is that one of them? Sure. I can tell you in 2003 and 04 and 05, you can look at the Hansard script and see me supporting domestic partner arrangements for dependent couples, regardless of sexual orientation. Well, let's just break that down.
Okay.
You know, Alberta in 03 or 04 or 05 is not San Francisco in 89.
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, those are different scenarios. And it's, you said that's been my long-standing public view. I mean, we're talking about over a decade here in terms of his public stance. And it's like, okay. But that's not what people are calling you out for.
Yeah.
We're calling you out for the fact that in the 80s, the people whose partners were literally dying couldn't see them in their final moments. Mm-hmm. Was there an apology for that? Not as far as we've been able to ascertain.
Mm-hmm.
So it is problematic. You know, and it's been... I don't know, there's just so much about it that's a bit eek. You know what I mean? He regrets the comments, but is that really apologizing for it?
I mean, indirectly it is, because, I mean, this is where the nerd comes out. There have been philosophical treatises looking at what the nature of an apology is and what you're trying to accomplish with an apology. And I think somebody pinned down 9 functions of an apology, and if he is expressing remorse and he is expressing regret of wrongdoing, that is kind of an apology. If he's not using the words "I apologize," it doesn't play well in the media. But if he's saying "I made a bad choice, I have evolved since then, I try to make better decisions now," I think that's better than nothing. For absolutely sure, absolutely sure, that is better than nothing. But when you bear in mind what apologies have looked like over the past 4 years in Canada, at least from the perspective of media releases, not in terms of actual how it plays out, because, you know, my favorite example of that is, of course, a year and a half ago when Toronto Pride apologized for Operation Soap and then did the same thing a week later.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. but what an apology is meant to accomplish, and I think... I mean, I don't absolve the guy by any means. That is a monstrous thing to have done. But to have acknowledged publicly that it was a bad move. It was a bad decision.
But that's not what's happened. He's said that maybe he regrets the comments made, which doesn't signal regret for the action.
Yeah.
And the fact that...
It's like saying, I'm sorry you feel that way.
Yeah. You know, since then, I have done differently. But what about then?
Yeah.
Are you being held accountable to then? Have you apologized to the survivors of the AIDS epidemic in San Francisco? You know what I mean?
So it is important to acknowledge when people have evolved, because we don't want to punish someone for doing better.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. If he did not actually properly acknowledge wrongdoing for the original decision, then that's not super great.
Well, it's worth noting that he has not been, he's been denied permission to attend many pride parades in Alberta. As a result, and this really speaks, we were talking last week about Toronto Pride, and I think, and the Toronto Police Service, I think this really speaks to the fact that as a community, we have very few tools.
Yeah.
And clearly in Alberta, the fact that nobody's really believing him.
I keep coming back. I think Vancouver was really clever when they came up with that solution of, can you prove that in the past 3 years you have had ongoing support for the community outside of Pride? Yes or no? If you have even marginal evidence, you're more than welcome to join the parade. Everyone can apply. Most people will not pass that very simple test. So, I mean, the fact that there's horrible people out there, they're not going to march in the parade. They don't pass the test. That's fine. I think that pretty neatly sums it up. I mean, the guy, it's been revealed that he did bad things and he's not accounting for it. So he's on the off list for now.
Well, Jason Kenney has also made comments about the gay-straight alliances in Alberta and the fact that Bill, I think it's 42 was the name of the bill. Bill 24, I was way off. That's the one that says that essentially if you are a parent in Alberta and your child is attending the Gay Straight Alliance, mm-hmm. there's no requirement to tell you that that is the case.
Okay.
Is
there a requirement to tell the parents if you're in drama club? Like, is there an requirement to tell the parents what the students are up to in general?
I mean, I don't know about drama club. And we will take the next week or so to look into Bill 24 and see the scope of it. But you know what I mean?
Like, are they targeting this? Like, if there's no requirement to tell the parents about activities in general, but gay straight alliances are special, that's not great. If there's a requirement to tell the parents about everything, and now they're saying, oh, wait a minute, what about GSAs? Maybe we should look into making an exception. I think that's a totally different conversation. I don't know. I think it's bizarre, because if they're only saying we need to tell parents mm-hmm. about involvements in GSAs, but, you know, parents are like, what are you doing on Fridays? Oh, I'm just hanging out with my friends. And it turns out they're on the basketball team. Like, that's, I don't understand why one and not the other. I don't know.
So
that's a very subtle thing that just occurred to me.
And there's a lot going on with this law. We've talked about it a little while ago about the fact that there was the opposition and saying that by creating this sort of secret space, it creates a space for predators to prey on children.
It creates a space for children to predate on each other, if anything.
But
that's high school.
Yeah. But what's really happening here is that there is concern that there's secrets being held about their children to their own parents. And I can sympathize with that to a degree. But when we talk about LGBT youth, being able to say where and when you are coming out, your coming out needs to be a personal decision. It should not be the decision of a bureaucrat.
Yeah.
And I don't think that any LGBT youth would go to a gay straight alliance where there can be resources, access to counseling, help, if they know that in doing so, they will be outed to their family. How do you access help if the tool to do so could lead you to being homeless? The significant percentage of homeless youth is LGBT because of unaccepting families. So where do you draw the line?
Well, part of it is the legal system in Canada, and it has evolved a fair deal, but it kind of treats children as the possessions of their parents. And it doesn't treat them as young, drunk adults who don't know better yet. And I am always one to treat youth and children as small adults who don't know better yet.
I tend to treat adults as small adults that don't know better yet.
Yeah, but if they're toddlers, I also treat them like they're drunk. Which, actually, you get a lot of mileage out of that because they're not stupid, but you do need to speak more slowly. Mm-hmm.
And don't trust them behind the wheel.
Never trust a two-year-old behind the wheel. But the kinds of things that you do need to tell the parents, like, you know, academic stuff and criminal stuff. Mm-hmm. Everything else, like, if someone from, let's say, a Sikh or a Muslim family writes an essay about the benefits of atheism, do you tell the parents about that? Or is that just academic stuff, like they're just doing their own thing? Like, where, what do you tell the parents about? What do you not tell the parents about? Maybe the parents are vegans and you saw the kid eating chicken nuggets at school. Like, are you going to report them? Is that your job? Like,
it's a challenge here because...
Not to liken veganism, which mm-hmm. is clearly
I mean, that was choice, a whole Peter debacle from last week. Oh, but I want to talk about... There's a lot of religious schools in Alberta as well. And the guidance being issued by the education minister, David Egan,
right.
is that by not conforming with the law, so by outing these children to their parents, which they claim would be... keeping the parents informed, etc. But by outing these children to their parents, their funding and accreditation could be at risk. So really, it's a follow the law or else, which they're taking the stance of very much from a child's rights perspective. It yeah. should be a child's... the child's own choice
yeah.
when and how they disclose.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm going to put a link in on our website, cancrea.news, to a London radio station where somebody called.
London, Ontario?
No, London, UK.
Okay.
And somebody called in. It was a beautiful interview and said, you know, I used to be that guy that literally went up and beat up people that I thought or knew was gay. Like, he was a violent homophobe.
Right.
Until one day he was called into the school where his son, flanked by two teachers, came out and was very much and realized in that moment that his rhetoric was so virulent
mm.
that his son thought the only way possible to survive telling him was to be protected by the teachers in the room
and monitored, yeah, to have witnesses, yeah.
And that's not too unrecent, you yeah. know what I mean? So schools play a vital tool in protecting children from sometimes their own parents,
yeah.
Does that mean that there should be secrets kept? I don't think so. But it's a complicated, complicated situation.
Yeah, I mean, like, if a fight breaks out at a GSA, you know, and somebody gets their, I don't know, their eye socket broken, which is a serious thing. And what, where were they? What was going on? You may have to reveal that, well, even then, you could say they were an after-school thing. Like, It's complicated.
Well, you know what's not complicated?
Oh my God.
Our first song of the day, which is Ria May's Bend. I like this one. I think we played it before, but I'm playing it again because I like it. And we'll be back talking about not Alberta.
I'm so glad that was not a segue to an Avril Lavigne song. Who is bisexual and French Canadian.
I know. We next could, time. I yeah. could have. I could have. But no, I already picked Ria May. Anyways, we'll be back just after this.
Head at the headlights, scream, baby, baby, yellow like I ruined your life. All night with my back against the wall, push me, push me, I'll never fall. Oh, baby.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Who's like leaning way back. It's like miles away from the mic today. All right.
Literally miles.
That's like all of 9.75 miles away. No, I did want to talk about now Saskatchewan. And
so we are going as the sun goes.
It's just a coincidence.
But Saskatchewan is east of Alberta.
It is literally the next one over. Yeah, no, I know. And I'm talking about Saskatchewan.
I'm going to veto any stories about Vancouver then.
Just to keep... We cannot. There is a story about Vancouver.
Oh, we did it wrong.
We may get to later as an addendum or something.
Okay.
I want to talk about Saskatchewan. Now, sticking momentarily as a brief aside with Alberta. The members of the Legislative Assembly, there is a push to introduce a private member's bill to ban conversion therapy
in
Alberta. We don't have too much information about it, but we do know that there is somebody there working on it. Now, there is also a national push, and it's actually the Saskatchewan MP, Sherry Benson, who is picking that up, or really... sort of carrying it through Parliament, which is quite exciting. We actually interviewed Sherry Benson. It's the MP for Saskatoon. That's what I was looking for here. Openly lesbian.
Okay.
And they're sponsoring the petition on behalf of people to introduce a ban nationwide. We have talked about Canada umming and ahhing about the ban. It is the, if you're looking for it, it is the E-1833 petition, because as you all know, that's the sexiest of all the petition names. So in terms of total signatures, there's been about 2,700, there's been 10,940 signatures so far, with two from Nunavut, which is pretty exciting. And of course, a large number from Ontario and Quebec and BC, with Alberta actually making up a significant number of the signatures in question. But pivoting for a moment back to Saskatchewan, the CBC had quite a considerable and detailed article looking at the story of advocates pushing to introduce a ban on conversion therapy within the province.
Okay.
Now, what's really interesting about this one is that they interview a lot of the actual churches there. So the I think it's the Eastern United Church said that even mentioning that being gay is wrong is a way of positioning it where being gay how was it phrased? It was phrased in such a way that it really seems to condemn the approach that being celibate or staying single, is seen as a way of actually saying, like, you know, it's awful, it's an awful thing about you, but you can live with it. Is still really centering it as a thing that should be avoided and not necessarily fixed, because yeah. We can't fix it, because that's so not appropriate now, but sort of living with this demon, as it were.
That's the orthodox approach.
Yeah,
and by orthodox, I mean like orthodox Christian, of which there's many varieties of orthodoxy, but the idea that when they say being gay is a choice, they're not saying having attractions is a mm-hmm. choice. They're saying doing actions that are consistent with those actions is a choice. You could choose to just be celibate, which is when they're saying, you know, you're choosing the lifestyle, what they're actually saying is that you're choosing to touch another man when you could just sit in the corner, sit on your hands and think about Jesus, and then yep. you know, everything's going to be fine. And I mean, have you seen some of those statues of Jesus? Because you don't want to be thinking about, you know, a taut, lean, naked man.
I am not going to engage in a conversation about fantasizing about idols of Jesus. But what I am going to talk about
Saint Sebastian is usually fit,
is
though.
Moose Jaw Pride.
Right, okay.
And Moose Jaw Pride, one of the trans advocates there, Laura Budd, spoke extensively in this and was really talking about the fact that they were aware of the fact that between 20 and 30 people in the last couple of years have come forward and said that there are conversion therapies. Yeah. And
these are the ones we know of.
And those are the ones that they know of.
Yeah.
And there are some churches that are, as they say, soft selling conversion. The mm-hmm. idea that, you know, it's not going to be, you know, I mean, just to go to the extreme, there was a doctor arrested in, I think it's South Africa. I'll put a link on our website, who was using electrotherapy on conversion to convert homosexuals.
Oh dear.
Which is not allowed in South Africa or really many other places in the world.
Yeah.
And has been arrested for it.
It is not FDA approved.
Absolutely not. And that's a bit of an extreme. And what we do see is that attempts to pray the gay away, that the attempts to change who you are causes psychological trauma. The College of Physicians and Surgeons hasn't had any complaints yet, so that's good. But it's the Canadian Psychological Association says there's absolutely no proof, and it does result in low self-esteem, anxiety, and depression. So this soft version of conversion therapy, which seems to be growing in popularity, which isn't quite pray the gay away,
mm-hmm.
but pray that you can just be less gay.
Okay.
Yeah. Just be celibate, you do you, but don't do you with anybody else. And it's difficult to navigate because on the one hand, we want to encourage LGBT folks who are Christian and have Christian faith,
mm-hmm.
Who may be struggling with reconciling elements of the Bible and interpretations of those elements that indicate that homosexuality
it's interpretations is wrong thereof. And
a sin.
Because there's very little in there that has anything to do with anything.
There are so many different churches and so many differing opinions on it.
Yeah.
That even within Saskatchewan, that there are churches that think that it is a sin that you have to live with. There are churches that think that you're all God's children. And, you know, you do you.
I mean, just it kind of boils down to if you got a problem with it, switch denominations. I mean, that's the quick and easy one. But even beyond that, there's a lot of things that are culture and tradition and are not scripture. Nowhere in the Bible does it mention what month Jesus was born in, later, let alone that he was born on the 25th of December. There's no mention of the seven deadly sins. That's actually Chaucer. Mm-hmm. What else is there? There's a few things that are not in the Bible. Oh, it never actually mentions an apple. It mentions a fruit. There is a fruit. And and it doesn't say that the serpent in the garden was the devil. It just calls it a snake. It was just a talking snake, a regular talking snake who said, hey, those are some mighty good-looking fruits. without mentioning apples in specific, but it became a tradition to interpret it in a certain way. So, I mean, if you're in a denomination that interprets that you are a living abomination and that every time you watch figure skating, you are committing a sin. Well, no, it wouldn't be when you're watching figure skating. It's when you're checking out the booty when they're figure skating.
Yeah.
Then maybe it's time to find a new church that Absolutely. Doesn't treat you as such, is really what it comes down to. United Unitarian and some branches of Church of England are considered to be pretty safe. Usually with all three of them, you can tell the moment you walk in what kind of congregation you're looking at. But anyway.
You know, at the end of the day, it all boils down to a perspective of personal faith on the matter. And we will leave that to our listeners to decide where they stand.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be frank. Conversion therapy of any particular ilk has been found to not work.
Yeah, well, yes.
And it really, the only thing it does is cause depression.
And trauma. Yeah.
It is not great. We would obviously recommending it, advocating for the mental health of LGBT folks.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a great practice. Now, I do have a couple of other Alberta ones and Vancouver, but I feel like you'd be annoyed if we if we go there. So let's loop all the way around, and I'm going to move on to Newfoundland.
Okay.
And the reason why I'm going to be talking about Newfoundland is that there was a story that we didn't get to where there was somebody had described it as a civil war.
Oh my.
At a high school in Botwood.
Now, is this typical media hyperbole, or is there actually something to it, do you reckon?
Nope. It started off with defacing posters, and that was how it was described within the community. One of the students there, Ashley Hoskins, said that the harassment has gotten worse, and it's pretty much a civil war starting in the school between the Gay Straight Alliance students and those who are sort of against them. It has escalated from damaging and defacing posters, which we also saw at the MUN in St. John, Newfoundland.
Mm-hmm.
And it has now moved into, and I quote here, they were saying they wanted people to die, they wanted to throw us in the box and light us on fire and throw us out in the water. That's a direct quote here from a grade 11 student at this school. Certainly.
What a strange threat.
Yeah, no, it will. I mean, I'm sure that there was a series of threats that she's summarizing.
Oh, that wasn't all at once.
Yeah.
Okay.
The comments started on social media. There's about 10 students that are really the particular advocates behind this. The Newfoundland and Labrador English School Board District has called the issue abhorrent, and they're going to be looking into it. Expulsion is on the table for certain students. But really, what's happening here is the escalating harassment, which started with the Gay Straight Alliance, and the vandalism of the posters, really needs to happen with education. And I think this is where we really took a big, strong stance with the Premier of Ontario, Doug Ford, rolling back the sex ed and rolling back the education and really making the onus on trans rights and education. That onus then fell to the trans students themselves, which is fundamentally unfair. So what folks are calling for in Newfoundland now, and EGAL I think the vice chair of EGAL has been a strong proponent of this, is that there needs to be changes in the curriculum in Newfoundland and Labrador to make sure that there's better education. Because right now it's ignorance that's feeding into hate. And these gay straight alliances are trying to bring folks together to create a safe space. But the rest of the student body isn't being given the right tools to better understand themselves or these other students.
Well, this is a situation where you need more than one tactic. Because education, quite frankly, is not going to work on certain individuals. So people who take a stance without evidence are not going to be brought back from that stance with evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're reacting emotionally, or they're reacting culturally, or they're reacting in some other way. And this kind of does feed into the issue that we talked about earlier. And there's all bunch of evidences, points, thingies from history that direct
case studies,
I guess you could say, that support this, that if somebody is homophobic or racist or what have you, by befriending the thing that they claim to hate, quite often that can undo it quickly. So my favorite example is always Dick Cheney, who was openly homophobic until his daughter came out as lesbian, and then all of a sudden he turned U-turn so fast. And then there was the story you told earlier about the guy who phoned into the UK station about his son. And when someone in your life comes out, all of a sudden things change very, very quickly.
I mean, it humanizes.
It humanizes not only the individual, but the entire situation. And education is definitely the place to start, but having a place where people can safely come in contact with each other and learn about each other is definitely the way to go. I mean, this is...
Without being outed to their parents.
Well, without being outed to their parents, yeah. And also without getting aggressive or judgy on the negative side of the equation, without being like, well, you know, if you're not best friends with this gay kid by the end of the week, like, we're going to expel you.
You're by default homophobic.
Yeah, I mean, that's poisoning the well, and they're going to probably rebel against that because people don't like being told what to think. And there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. And I really hope, like, not to say that education is not the place to start. It 100% is. Because, like, again, I think I've been saying this again and again over the past, like, 6 months. The original curriculum in Ontario with regards to homosexuality is, like, in grade 3, I think it is. They're like, gays, semicolon, they exist. That's the lesson. And it's basically just... these people.
I mean, it starts there. Yeah. As the grades
and
go.
It goes on over time, but basically, like, the curriculum is basically like, here are these things, they exist, you know? They exist in the world, they exist in society. Whether or not you like them, that's a different issue, but we're just telling you right now, it's out there. And that kind of starting from there before they get too much exposure to too many negative things and just being like, here's this thing that exists in the world, I can form my own opinion, and then other people will probably try to adjust it over time, because that's what happens when you live in society. So if you don't want that, become a hermit. Unfortunately, you know, it's awkward, but there it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, point being, this is the start, and I really hope they do take a multiple angle approach to this, because villainizing them, they're just going to become villains.
Yeah, well, or they'll become martyrs.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
What that would do is it kind of creates a very much a strong us versus them vibe.
Yeah.
And I think that working on education, working on some reconciliation between those two groups in the school needs to happen. That school needs a lot of work.
Oh, yes.
But I think that rest of the province needs to take a look at how its students are being educated so that they can maybe address these issues before they arise.
And there's something, it's very difficult. It's one of the hardest things you can do, but you can get so far in life if you learn to have compassion for the people who hate you most. And I'm looking at you, Toronto Police Services. But learning to actually, you know, find in your heart the attempt... I think because we were talking about Christianity before, I'm talking like this. But
turn the other cheek.
Yeah. That, you know, learning to appreciate somebody else's perspective, you know, even if they're wrong and horrible people, it will allow you to get that little bit closer. And both sides, one side needs to do it way more than the other, obviously. But understanding, like, well, maybe they feel this way because parents or something like that.
Let's be clear here that we are not putting the onus on the folks who are being targeted.
Oh, no. This is the teachers need to organize something.
It's not the responsibility of gay students to go and educate their homophobic student friends.
No. Yeah.
Oh, not friends in this case. You know, there's a lot of work. It's a complicated issue.
Mm-hmm.
Learning, education, young adult lives are a complicated situation. Now,
I got through high school by avoiding most people.
I would, same. Now, on our Cross Canada News Tour,
right?
I'm now moving to PEI, which I believe is a smidge further to the east.
It depends on where you were in Newfoundland. So it could be anywhere from west-southwest to south-southwest, I would say.
Okay. So is that in the right direction?
Down and to the left.
Okay. All right. Well, anyways, PEI, which is like tiny, and we don't talk about PEI too much, although I think we did mention something a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, because PEI, there's a pride in PEI that went through some stuff. That was October, I think? September? Something.
It was around then.
Yeah.
And there's now a group operating out of PEI who are doing more LGBT-friendly events. They're called Five Point Event Productions. It's being run by Carl McCallum of Tignish and Wayne Matheson of Charlottetown.
Okay.
I believe Tignish is actually in Newfoundland, but I'll need to double check that. And they're holding various events, and they want to start having more events for the LGBT people of Prince Edward Island. So I think this is really cool to see some grassroots initiative to get what's quite a small population, creating a space for them to come together. I feel like PEI is a perfect example of like small towns across the rest of Canada.
Yes,
you know what I mean? And it's like, it's really nice to see this initiative to bring people together. So
it's a... I mean, I'd like for them to really embrace the sort of local spirit, and other than all the usual boring crass things like, oh, what is it? The little girl stories from PEI that I can never remember because I'm not really into little girl stories. And then there's potatoes. But then there's also super dang big long bridge. I don't know if you can fit that onto a flag or onto a header of some kind, but super big, super dang, big dang bridge. Big bridge, very big bridge.
Yeah, you're rambling now. So, 5PEI is coming up to the 25th anniversary. It was actually the MLAs in PEI, sorry.
What's an MLA? What are you talking
member
about?
Member of Legislative Assembly.
Oh, right.
They were looking at banning conversion therapy. That was actually the story, I think, that we mentioned a little while ago.
I mean, we could have just done one story and listed everywhere that's talking about banning conversion therapy.
I know. It's like, I feel like it's all over the place. It seems to be a sort of a common thread at the moment.
And Ontario was talking about it when Wynne was in, but I don't know what's up now.
So they did actually pass the motion, but it doesn't really have a legal standing in PEI. That's like the issue. And that was back in November 21st. So that was actually quite recently as well. But what it shows, this event shows, what Pride PEI shows, what this motion shows, is that PEI is really moving forward on LGBT rights.
Oh, good.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to jump to a song so that we can kind of reset the map. And come back. And this is a very short song. It's the Ellen Page by Partner, which is always one of my favorites. And we'll be back just after this.
Hey, rolling. Okay.
Sound speeding.
Take one. Rolling.
Mark that.
People say that I talk like Ellen Page. I guess that makes sense since we come from the same place. But it's more than just a regional thing. Cause if it's 50% maritime, it's 50% lesbian. We're on the same page. The Ellen Page. The Ellen Page.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And there were a couple of other stories. There was a couple in Alberta who got who were fired, and they believe it was for on homophobic grounds. We won't have time to really get into that. And there is a potentially a a speaker going into a Vancouver event, that's also very problematic. We will be linking to all of those.
So there's different interpretations of drag, and then you get things like Demedna from Australia. Yes. Totally different kind.
Well, in the UK, what really popularized drag, we don't sit and lip sync. And in fact, in one of the seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race, they had a British queen who just refused to lip sync for her life.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's not what we do. We have no history of that.
Drag in England is more like stand-up comedy.
It really is. Yeah. It really is.
But, like, a weird improvisational, you know, banter with the audience kind of.
You say that. One of my favorite drag queens was Graham Norton's. Not Graham Norton. It was Lily Savage, which, and I forget that Lily Savage is non. Oh, drag persona.
Why do I know that name?
Because Lily Savage is amazing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She's from Manchester. She was and it's like a scouse mother. Uh-huh. Like working class, and it's like that sort of dirt poor but, you know, real down to earth.
Oh yeah, no, I recognize.
Who is it? Who's the non?
Paul O'Grady.
Paul O'Grady, yeah, quite a prominent talk show host in the UK. And you know, that's what I love. It's about the character. It's about, you know, Lily Savage. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows that woman. You know what I mean? You can easily identify with it. Some of the jokes that Lily Savage makes, I'm like, oh my God, I can remember when my mother did something like that.
Yeah.
And that was the whole comedy. It's about creating a caricature and there's no lip syncing.
No.
Maybe there was a bit of a song and dance, a bit of a cabaret style comedy. So.
And then I think one of the most popular current drag queens in Montreal, very similar, more of a stand-up act, and it, I believe she goes by the stage name of Mado, but my phone is freaking out.
I think that's right. I remember that name.
Yeah, Mado, and she does stand-up comedy in two languages, but she's way more brutal and perverted in French. Mostly because she identifies if there's any heterosexual Anglos in the audience, and then she just switches back and forth between French and English, largely at their expense.
You know, one of the things that has me really worried, and I've talked about the impact that Drag Race has had on Canadian drag culture, for example. Ottawa and Toronto and Montreal have a thriving, truly incredible drag king scene.
Yes.
Which is women, typically lesbians, who are impersonating men.
Yeah.
And it has a really quite an incredible emerging scene of sort of gender non-conforming, sort of a drag, we don't know what it is,
and
category.
And again, some of them impersonate specific men, and some of them just do an act. Yeah.
And, you know, Frank and Beans impersonates everybody's least favorite shock jock type character.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, that guy exists in the world.
Frank and Beans is a very good example. Like, I think there should be a word in English that means, I love it because I hate it. And that would be Frank and Beans, you know?
So, and that's a character's name. A brand. So there's a, what it means is that when you think of, oh my God, what is good drag?
Yeah.
You look at the winners of RuPaul, the all-star season winners. And American drag, the comedy is a lot more slapstick. The, oh, it's biting. It's almost mean-spirited. Yeah. There's a lot more glamour and pageantry. The UK never really had pageants. It's a very American thing.
Yeah.
And so there's a huge concern that the incredibly diverse and hundreds of years of history of drag in the UK is going to get obliterated.
Yeah.
And what's even more is that in America, the impact of Drag Race in America means that if you've been on Drag Race, you can get booking fees in the thousands, if not tens of thousands. Which means if you're a local queen, good luck getting a job.
Even in the States, there's different local traditions in drag. This is the other thing that just kills me. Actually, if you want to see a good classic comedy set from Canadian drag queens who've written and they perform their own songs, look up the B-Girls. They were really big in the mid-2000s. Mm-hmm. I actually got to meet them out of costume in at Sarnia Pride, of all places. And their boy modes do not match their drag characters at all. I never would have guessed that it was them. They were all three of them super cute. If they listen to this show, they can look me up any day of the week. But anyway, Yeah, definitely check out the B-Girls. They're all over Showcase, where they would, like, get in drag and impersonate famous movies. Yeah, it's really bizarre, the idea that this chunk of history is being erased because of a TV show.
And it's unfortunate because it is... Drag Race has now made elements of queer culture accessible to everybody.
Yeah.
But it is queer culture that is rooted in the New York ball scene. It is queer culture that is distinctly San Francisco and New York.
Oh, it's more New York, Chicago, Detroit, that sort of upstate.
But it is not corridor. Toronto. No. It is not Vancouver's queer scene. It is not London, Birmingham, Manchester.
It's not even New Orleans, which has a totally different drag scene.
You know, and we occasionally see Puerto Rico on there, but you see these drag queens sort of contort to this sort of very same look and feel.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate because, you know, Bianca Del Rio was in the UK where I think it was Wembley which she was performing at. She ran a season a couple of years ago. And one of the critiques is that these drag queens do really well and they sell out massive venues where all the straight people go and buy all the tickets.
Yeah.
But all the gay bars who support the local drag scene are going out of business.
Yeah.
And it's really unfortunate that this is gay culture that's been packaged up and sold.
Some of that is because Grindr is ruining everything. But that's
I'm not disagreeing.
That's a different conversation.
It's unfortunate that the way that the RuPaul drag scene is moving is it's less supporting, or it's been alleged to support less gay bars and more big establishments.
Yeah.
And it may be contributing to the closure of those bars.
Well, some of the big classic drag queens that they would fill, like I think it's Craig Russell, actually, the famous Canadian female impersonator. He got an off-Broadway show, and he actually filled a stadium with, like, I think 3,000 people was the largest audience he ever performed in front of, which is insane.
Yeah.
And they kind of made a pseudo biography about him called Outrageous. It's a wonderful movie. It was filmed just as the CN Tower was completed. So it's this Canadian film about a famous Canadian drag queen. Mm-hmm. I also recommend that. It's aged very well. It looks exactly like Toronto. And the reason why it looks exactly like Toronto.
Because it is Toronto?
Well, because it is Toronto, and because all the storefronts, you can't see what's in there because they're scaffolding everywhere. Mm-hmm. And half the movie, they're going like, they're walking on the road because there's too much scaffolding on the sidewalk, which is a very Toronto experience. But anyway, it's just a really well done movie, and I totally recommend it. But there's a lot of that going on where, like the San Francisco Fulton leather culture has pushed out other interpretations of what it means to be masculine or kinky in other communities. And you have this thing going on where the sort of homogenization through popular media.
There's one way to be a drag queen. There's one way to wear leather.
Yeah.
You know, drag in the UK, you know, drag queens have a bit of, the RuPaul's Drag Race has a bit of a cult following.
Mm-hmm.
But the worry is that by putting it on the BBC, by putting Jonathan Ross on there as a judge, it's going to be an attempt to mainstream drag. And the ones that are going to lose is the incredible diversity of drag that already exists. Yeah. It's really unfortunate. And we'll, you know, maybe I'll watch it, maybe I won't. It'll be difficult to see what happens.
Oh, you'll watch it.
I mean,
you have very poor taste in your TV habits.
I do, but I have a critical eye. unfortunately, though, I think that's all we've got time for.
Oh.
There was some other news. We will post it at kangria.news, those as they come up. But we're playing out with Cher, Gimme, 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 and Man After Midnight, because it came up recently in my 2018 Wrapped playlist, and I was like, yes, let's play Cher.
Well, Gimme, Gimme, Gimme is one of my top favorite ABBA songs. Yeah.
Yes. It's a cover of ABBA.
Yeah.
Anyways, I've been Luke Smith.
And I have been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.